Hello, my friends. Dr. Ken Berry here, talking about a very important topic today and also unveiling some new research, not done by me, but done by actual researchers. About a third of people, when they start a ketogenic diet, their cholesterol goes down. About a third of people, when they start keto, their cholesterol stays the same, as does their LDL. About a third of people, when they start keto, their LDL cholesterol goes up. But then there's this little subset of people that when they start keto, their LDL goes crazy high and is very worrisome to their doctors. Well, there's some new research that's just been dropped about a term that was invented by Dave Feldman called lean mass hyperresponders. And you may have heard this term. You may have heard of Dave Feldman from cholesterolcode.com fame. I'm joined by Dave, and I'm joined by Dr. Tro, and I'm joined by Professor Nick Norwitz, who is soon to be Dr. Professor Norwitz. Let's bring them all on, and we're going to talk about this new research article that's just been published. Hello, hello, hello. Hello, gentlemen, doctors and professors. How's it going?
Now I'm embarrassed. That was a joke about the professor thing for everybody's reference.
I love it. I love it. So you guys have all taken part in this research paper that's just been very recently published, hot off the presses, along with Dr. Ludwig. And then there, I think there was one more gentleman on the paper as well.
Dr. Adrian Soto-Mota, MD, yes. PhD, a good friend of mine.
Yes, yes. And so let's start with Dave Feldman, my good friend, since he actually coined the term lean mass hyperresponder. It's been a few years back now, right, Dave? Tell us what in the world made you ever come up with this concept? How did you have this paradigm shifting thought, and where has it led you?
Yeah, so of course it started out when I had first observed the term hyperresponder, since I had seen my own cholesterol go up after I'd gone on a low-carb diet and wanted to find out more about what was going on with hyperresponders in general, including myself. And I did find that in my own patterns, not only could I change things a lot with the food that I was consuming, which, as you know, is pretty prominent in the research I was showing just with my own N of one experiments back in 2016, 2017. But as I got towards the center, the middle of 2017, I realized there really is something also to be said about how lean you are. So not just being super low carb keto, but also if one tends to be lean, and especially if they also tend to be fit along with it, there seemed to be the most pronounced hyper response. However, this also was kind of coinciding with a pattern I like to call the triad. I'm very interested in not just seeing the high LDL, but also what's going on with HDL and triglycerides. And there was an amazing amount of heterogeneity, I think, maybe I'm using the wrong word there, but commonality, I should say, with this triad, to the point where it was getting to where I could just practically guess what somebody's fitness and leanness is just by the lipid levels that they would send me. And so I set up these cut points that is an LDL of 200 milligrams per deciliter or higher, an HDL of 80 milligrams per deciliter or higher, and triglycerides of 70 milligrams per deciliter or lower, and called it a lean mass hyperresponder. The lean mass is not actually, it's observational to what I would see with those cut points. And that, it's funny because I put this article up in July of 2017, and I was kind of afraid that maybe I was just kind of spitballing too much, and probably a lot of people would come back and be like, no, I'm not lean at all. I'm, you know, morbidly obese, but I have this profile. And no, it turned out to explode. A lot of people were commenting on it. And then past that point, there ended up being a whole community that grew out of it because we all wanted to figure out what was going on with this phenotype.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got probably 20% of my patrons on Patreon.com are lean mass hyperresponders. And I can almost, without even, they can just tell me what their LDL is. And they're very, very slender. Their LDL is 300. And then I can almost fill in the blanks what their triglycerides and their HDL is without even asking them. I can almost sound psychic and be like, and you have triglycerides of this and HDL of this. And they're like, how did you know? It's like, well, it seems like there's a pattern. So Dr. Tro, he had five patients. And Dr. Tro's name is listed on this paper. He did some of the work Tell us about your patients and the peculiar thing you discovered about the absence or the adding carbs or taking carbs out of the diet.
Well, first I want to say that I want to say thank you to Nick for really spearheading this project and really taking it. Me and Dave kind of started talking about this a year and a half ago after fighting for 3 years about this topic, probably. And I came to see the light, which is basically there is certainly a lipid energy relationship, particularly when you're carbohydrate restricted or when you're fasting. And you know, the more we exchange data about Ramadan fasting and the more we exchange data on very lean people, I started to come around and being a skeptic of Dave Feldman turn into a believer of Dave Feldman. And then, you know, as I progressed in my clinical career, I started seeing that same phenomenon you're talking about, Ken, where these patients came in with a LDL of 700 and or total cholesterol of 700. I think the LDL was innumerable, and they said to me, hey, my labs are not always like this. And my patient said to me, I have a team of cardiologists and I won't take drugs. Just tell me what I need to do. And so when we brought back some carbohydrates in those patients, the cholesterol really came down. And after about 5, 6, 7 patients that exhibited that same phenomenon, I was like, Dave, you know, you're absolutely right. You got it right. And it doesn't take much carbohydrates to bring it, you know, to bring it down. And instead of relegating people to medications, you know, and some of those patients may need medications or may tolerate the medications, then that's fine. But instead of relegating that, is there something that can reverse this phenomenon? What is it? Is it the saturated fat? Is it the carbohydrates? Even though it's not clear, it seems to be that all it takes is carbohydrate reintroduction. And so I shared this data with Nick, and Nick just eyes lit up, you know, and is like, we have to get this out there. And he was really instrumental in taking all of Dave's survey and taking my clinical data and basically confirming what both me and Dave felt and saw. Which is that carbohydrate restriction, especially when you're lean, will raise your cholesterol. When you're very lean, not the people with obesity and diabetes, right? They're less likely to have that happen. Not, you know, exclusively, but less likely, but more likely to happen when you're much leaner and much healthier. And Nick saw all this data and said, you know, I got just the guy. And what happened after that, Nick?
Well, then I brought in my, so just a little bit of background on how I got interested in this area. Again, was a personal story similar to Dave, where I went low carb, ketogenic for other health reasons, ulcerative colitis at the time. And you know, I was very conventional in my perspective on what healthy was. So in all my lists of diets to try, ketogenic was at the bottom, but I was kind of desperate and I tried it. The way I tried it, though, was, you know, in as healthy a way as I could imagine, which means lots of fiber, lots of unsaturated fat. And I was astonished to find my LDL went, and I can give you the numbers, from 95 to, in the high fiber, high unsaturated fat context, 321 within 6 months. And it went up higher after that. Again, with the same triad that Dave described, my LDL went sky high. My HDL also went sky high with it, like well over 100. My triglycerides dropped rock bottom. And I thought, this is the weirdest thing. At the time, I thought I was a zebra. I studied it a little bit. And after a while, I stumbled upon some of, you know, Dave's posts. And it just, it made so much sense. And I'm someone who just, if there's an interesting question at the forefront, I will pursue it doggedly with all the time I have. And this was one that was like more mind-blowing than anything I think I've ever come across since. Because this is something that I don't want to say, for lack of a better word, challenges, or I would say elaborates upon like 50 years of cardiology dogma. I'm not right here, to be clear, trying to challenge the lipid harm hypothesis or any of that, but there just seemed like this blind spot, this quirky little phenomenon. is just exceptional in terms of lipidology and cardiovascular research. I'm like, if we could understand what this is, then it just expand our knowledge about the number one killer, except for this year, of Americans. And so I became really interested. I ended up getting in touch with Dave, and a media superstar that he was, he's was willing to respond to me, and then we became good friends. I became friends with Tro. And with respect to this project, when I saw the data, I knew we needed a proper bias statistician. And so I roped in my friend Adrian Soto, who's an internal medicine doc down in Mexico. We did our PhDs together over at Oxford, and just a genius biostatistician. Can't be here with us today, unfortunately, but he really helped us level up the data and do basically what we consider a hypothesis-naive exploratory analysis, where we were able to take all this data, this raw data, and then just have a computer kind of sit for patterns to see if those patterns fell out as we predicted. So we were able to approach the data in such a way that we weren't massaging numbers to conform to our hypothesis, but rather just like, you know, what does the data say? And what the data said was really astonishing. And we can bridge to that.
Yeah. So Dave, you want to take it from there? What did the data show? And I promised all these guys and Dr. Ludwig that I would not offer any opinions or hypotheses as to what this means. I'm just going to let them talk. So I'm trying really hard, guys. I promise I'm biting my tongue, but I'm wanting to jump in here and be like, see, but I'm not going to do that. I promise. So Dave, tell us what you found.
Well, and before I do though, I do want to mention our one other author, of course, being Dr. Ludwig himself. Even though he wasn't able to join us, we are huge fans of his work. And I should emphasize also, he would want us to express rightly the caution that even whatever our findings are, they A, they're preliminary, B, they're observational, and they don't speak to the risk. So even if it turns out that the lipid energy model that we're going to talk about today and how this may relate back to these findings that we have, it could very well be true that the energy model is right, but also the lipid hypothesis is right. So we want to give due diligence and make sure that we emphasize that while we're excited about this research, we don't know what its actual implications are. Unfortunately, as you know, Ken, we have a clinical trial in action right now where we're actually looking at lean mass hyperresponders and cardiovascular disease outcome, particularly with CT angiograms. So saying that aside, let's get to the findings. They're so exciting because, yes, I came to the lean mass hyperresponder phenotype through simple pattern recognition, not too incomparable to metabolic syndrome. Metabolic syndrome was a combination of pattern recognition over time before it became something that we now use commonly. I would say the same thing with lean mass hyperresponders. It was observationally something I saw over time, but what would our survey data say? And fortunately, we had 1,000 people who answered my standing survey, and I was able to bring it to the study. And just as Nick said, Adrian's amazing. Don't let his being a practicing doctor fool you. He seems like he's a round-the-clock super biostatistician. I don't even know how he pulls that off, doing both of them at the same time. But yes, he went through machine learning, completely, you know, taking out the lean mass hyperresponder phenotype or any input biases so that we would find out what the machine learning would determine. And we've got a great chart. I forget what the name of that type of chart is, but it parses out exactly how it came to basically the same triad that, you know, I was looking at in 2017 and that a lot of the lean mass hyperresponders were bringing back and acknowledging and confirming. So indeed, there actually is effectively a lean mass hyperresponder that emerged from the data. And then from there, we went ahead and did like a more acute analysis with lean mass hyperresponders themselves, which I'd want to segue back to Nick, because of course he can give an even more robust accounting of what that showed us.
Yeah,
absolutely. And let me just interject. I love what you said about the pattern recognition, Dave, because I can remember when I was fourth year med student, first year resident, that was back in the long time ago. That's when metabolic syndrome, enough people were recognizing this pattern. And they're like, hey, I think this is a real thing. Back then they called it Syndrome X.
Right.
And I can remember a couple of my older mentors with some salt and pepper. They both thought that Syndrome X was a load of crap. They're like, that's dumb. It doesn't bring anything to the table. It doesn't help us in any way. We can't use that diagnostically or therapeutically. It's just some people trying to get a syndrome X. Oh, they just want to get their name on a paper. And now, as we all know, metabolic syndrome is accepted ubiquitously and is very, very helpful, especially in teasing out people who are very, very early and they haven't developed type 2 diabetes yet, but they're already got three or more of the diagnostic indicators of metabolic syndrome. But that you're exactly right. When this was first becoming popular, many of the older doctors said, that's a load of crap. Go ahead, yeah. Nick. Sorry.
Yeah, no, Dave kind of alluded to some of the really cool findings. I'm going to reference some of the figure numbers from the text in case we can throw them up post-editing. But yeah, so the first thing we observed is when we just built like linear regression models to assess, you know, what were predictors of high LDL. So if we took people's pre-diet LDL and their post-diet LDL, that big change, what would predict the larger change? And what we found was the strongest predictor was BMI. So the leaner you were, the larger your LDL increase, which is in and of itself a fascinating finding. But then we went to look at the syndrome X you were just talking about, the metabolic syndrome markers. And the opposite of atherogenic dyslipidemia, the most prevalent, you know, lipid pattern now causing cardiovascular disease or associated with cardiovascular disease, which is high triglycerides and low HDL. The opposite of that, which is a low triglyceride to HDL ratio, that also was directly and inversely associated with LDL increase. So we're seeing two things. The leaner you are, the higher your LDL increase, and the more metabolically healthy you are, the higher your LDL increase. And then we can combine these things, kind of look at them independently, and what we find is that they add up, or like they synergize. So one really cool figure, Dave mentioned it earlier, figure two in our paper, we have a 3D bar graph where you on the one axis you have, you know, triglyceride to HDL ratio dropping, and then the other axis you have BMI dropping. And as you see, independently, as you go along those axes, the LDL levels rise, which is really fascinating. And one thing Adrian was able to do, which I think was quite elegant, is this is supplemental figure two, actually do a mathematical assessment of the value of, if you were to create like a predictive algorithm, looking using BMI or using triglyceride to HDL ratio to predict LDL change when you go low carb, he found that each were great predictors, but they really were better predictors when you combined them, saying that, you know, look at BMI, the leaner you are, the higher the LDL. Look at triglyceride to HDL ratio, the leaner you are, or the lower, the higher the LDL change. Combined, it's an even better predictor. And then another thing that we did, which Dave alluded to, is the decision tree. This is supplemental figure three, where, okay, our one assessment showed the pattern that we hypothesized we would see. Even though we used a hypothesis-naive analysis, it showed what we would see. But really, to make this a really strong conclusion, let's try to approach it a completely different way. Use a different analysis and see if we still get the same pattern. So he basically designed a machine learning algorithm to say, okay, if we just throw all the data we have at you, you choose like an algorithm, a cascade, a decision tree to kind of figure out, you know, who would have the larger LDL increases and who would have the smaller. And the number one thing that fell out as the most important predictor was BMI. The number two thing was triglyceride to HDL ratio. There's some ironies in there because it's like when BMI came out as the first decision point, the cut point for BMI was less than 25, which, as you know, is the cut point for what is overweight. And this, just to be clear, the machine learning algorithm is completely naive to human definitions of what overweight is. So the algorithm just happened to chose what is overweight for the number one predictor in isolation of whether or not you'd have an LDL increase. So basically, to wrap up, we looked at the data in a hypothesis-naive analysis, used multiple approaches, and kept on coming to the same answer. The leaner you are and the more metabolically healthy you are, the larger your LDL increase. And that is a very interesting and provocative finding, I think.
So, Ken, can I actually add one thing to that? So bringing it back to what you were saying at the beginning, it was what I would often hear in a low-carb conference, which is, hey, it seems to be about 25% see their LDL go down, 25%, you know, or 30%, 50% don't, 25% see it go up. what we're stating here is actually quite substantial if, in fact, we do see these patterns perpetuate. Of course, we'd like to see more research further confirm this. But effectively, what this paper posits is that if you already are metabolically obese, if you are already overweight and you're struggling with diabetes and so forth, there's a pretty strong chance, per our opinion at this point, that you're likely not going to see a substantial increase in your LDL. So if that's a concern that you have coming into this, that's very relevant. Conversely, let's say that you do know that you're going to be leaner. There is, we would posit, a fairly high likelihood that you might see your LDL go up, especially the leaner you are. But as per Tro's case studies and why this is very relevant to this paper, there may be something you can do where you can still remain low carb, just not keto, where perhaps you bring in a little bit more of those carbohydrates, which I'm sure Tro could expand on a bit more.
Right.
Yeah, I think one of the issues will be, you know, somebody who is on a diet for seizures or migraines, or somebody who's on a diet for autoimmune bowel disease or diabetes, right? Or they've lost weight using other approaches, and this is the only one that's worked. So they are unwilling to make drastic changes to their diet and give up kind of the low carb approach completely. But they also, you know, have pre-diet cholesterol levels that were not wildly abnormal. And what can they do? And while the data here is not conclusive, you know, in 5 patients, we were able to, you know, lower astronomically high cholesterols with some carbohydrate reintroduction. Now, I'd like to caveat that by saying these patients all had testing for genetic issues. They had exams looking to see if they had any findings of plaque deposition anywhere in their body, you know, whether it's a carotid ultrasound or a calcium score in some cases, or a physical exam looking for deposition of cholesterol. So each of these patients had a thorough evaluation. And so it's not generalizable. I think that when the average person hears this and has a very high cholesterol level, they should probably go talk to their doctors and make sure they get a thorough evaluation. But in this case series, we showed that it didn't take much. It was 50 to 100 grams of carbohydrates, you know, to reduce LDL by, you know, what was it, Nick, 480?
Yeah, the one guy had like a sweet potatoes equivalent of carbs, and his LDL dropped 480 from 665 to 185, which that's mind-blowing to me. It's really fascinating. And if you don't mind, I'm actually going to use that as a bridge, because I feel like we've been engaging in a sin of Dave Feldman, which is focusing on an isolated marker. We've been talking about LDL a lot, and that's always the focus. But we observed other things in this trial too. So just like there was an inverse correlation between BMI and LDL increase, there was an inverse correlation between BMI and HDL increase. HDL ran with the LDL in concert with the lipid energy model, which we'll get to in a minute. But then that was also in the context of the really, really low triglycerides. So based on our hypothesis naive exploration, we were seeing a pattern that was consistent with the lipid energy model. And then it made sense to go a step further with our analyses and basically ask the question, you know, people say these lean mass hyper responders, I'm quoting it, it's a made up thing. I mean, I guess everything is made up at some level, but like, let's try to select them out. Let's select out people with these absurd lipid cut points. I mean, Dave can describe better than I could why he officially chose those cut points, 200 for LDL, 80 for HDL, and 70 for triglycerides. But the way I understand it, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, is individually, each of these cut points is really hard to meet. You don't find someone with the LDL above 200 that often, or an HDL above 80, or triglycerides below 70. So to have those in combination by chance is very unlikely unless they're part of a pattern. Is that a fair rationale for...
Yes. Well, and I'm glad you brought up... I mean, to be fair, it's funny because when you said this is a sin of Dave Feldman, it almost sounded like I commit that sin. No, I quite literally tweeted on that today that I feel like it's a sin of ours whenever we look at a lipid, particularly a lipid number in isolation. I'm such a strong advocate for us to be looking at these things in combination, and particularly to look at the patterns. And let's face it, atherogenic dyslipidemia and metabolic syndrome are already doing that. They're at least combining two of those lipid numbers, and we should be looking at those folks, which is the whole point of the clinical trial. We should be looking at those folks that have this triad, whether it came from a low-carb diet or whether it's in the existing literature. But that said, those that we see coming up with keto, as you were just mentioning, Nick, these are levels that we don't see anywhere. We don't, we just, this is brand new territory, for better or for worse. This is uncharted ground that we're walking through. Yeah. And I think it's, I personally think, and I've said this many times before, but I'll just say it one more time. I think lean mass hyperresponders are going to teach us a lot about metabolism, period, not just about low carb. I think they're going to actually tell us a lot about how the system works once you get into this scenario. But we do need to find out whether or not it's truly safe or not.
Yeah. Yep.
No, and no. I can tell you guys, from 21 years of clinical experience practicing with patients, I had never a single time seen this combination of sky-high LDL associated with very low triglycerides and a high HDL. Literally had never seen that, not once in my practice. And I checked tens of thousands of lipid panels. I was known as the lab work doc. If you wanted your labs checked, you go see Dr. Barry, he'll check it. And I never saw that and never even knew that was even possible until I heard Dave Feldman talking, I think it was on the low carb cruise a few years back, about this whole concept. And I was like, and so I started looking back at some of my old labs, and yes, I'd never seen that pattern a single time. But when you have a group of people start eating a very, very low carbohydrate diet, you start having these people who are typically very lean, they start having this repetitive pattern that just kind of pops out. So I think Dave's exactly right. I think we're going to learn a profound amount of previously unknown information about human metabolism because of this lean mass hyperresponder subset. I think they're going to teach us some things about the human metabolism that we never even dreamed of before. I think Dave's exactly right about that. And I'm excited to see what's going to come of this.
So we kind of had two major, sorry, go ahead, Tro.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the two main clinical questions that I think we may have some answers to right now is, can we predict who is more likely to have a higher LDL increase, right? And is there a potential way to reverse that phenomenon that we see in a low-carb diet, potentially without drugs if they're not needed? And it seems like, yes, we can predict those people. And it's not the people with obesity and diabetes and metabolic syndrome that you alluded to. And, or at least it seems that way. We need further studies, obviously. And it seems like there's a really easy way to deal with that problem if it occurs. If somebody loses a ton of weight on low carb and their cholesterol, you know, starts to go up, you know, can they do something? Yeah, they can, you know, increase their carbohydrates to 50 or 100 grams, particularly around exercise. And it seems to help. And again, this isn't medical advice. Just, you know, talk to your doctor. There are special considerations to make when the cholesterol level is that high, particularly we're talking about genetic disorders of lipid metabolism. But, you know, if this is a diet-induced phenomenon, it seems to be a phenotype that's reversible.
Yeah. I just want to mention two really interesting things we observed about lean mass hyperresponders when we did that subsequent analysis, which was, and this is going to sound like the statement water as well, but they were actually leaner. So just to circle back to what we were saying before, the definition, the metabolic definition of LMHR as set forth by Dave Feldman in 2017 is these three lipid cut points. It has nothing to do with BMI. So prior to this, you know, that relationship was not established. So first question we asked is, if we just take people with this triad, are they any different in terms of BMI? And they were. The p-value was like 1.1 times 10 to the negative, like, I don't know, 11th or something. It was crazy. I think the mean BMI was 21.9 for reference. And I think in NHANES data, it's like 28.8. So you can think about what it is with reference to, you know, the median for the population. Mean or median, I forget which one. And also just some other numbers to throw out there. Like the mean levels of LDL, HDL, and triglycerides in this LMHR group, they were crazy. They were 316 LDL. 316, that's on par with heterozygous FH. HDL mean was 99. Triglycerides mean was 47. These numbers are nuts. But my favorite number maybe in the paper was not a p-value of 10 to the negative 11th. It was looking at the LDL of the lean mass hyper-responders prior to low carb, comparing them to non-LMHR. Because one could argue, well, maybe they had a high LDL from baseline or something. The median LDL levels of LMHR and non-LMHR were exactly the same. They were both 135, which is nuts. And then you have this massive increase in lean mass hyper-responders. So those are kind of two major findings. You know, we identified the triad. We looked at the medians. We saw that the, you know, pre-diet LDL levels were dead normal, which is consistent with the case report coming from Tro's clinic, that then you can reverse the phenotype by just reintroducing carbohydrates. And we showed that lean mass hyper-responders were indeed lean, confirming the name and the hypothesis that's actually built into the name quite elegantly, I think.
Nick, can I add to that? I think it's also important that it shows it's most likely not the FH phenotype, right? It is most likely not that, you know, disease state where you get cholesterol deposits on your eyes and your tendons and you get early, you know, atherosclerotic disease. It is most likely not related to that, which is a concern of most cardiologists right now. Their numbers before the diet were about the same.
Yeah, right? I think, can I ask you, Tro, and you, Dave, both, of all the people that we've assessed for genetic risk, like FH, basically, so PCSK9, LDL receptor mutations, have we found any lean mass hyper responders who have mutations at all?
I haven't seen one, and I want to say I've done at least the 7-gene panel. I've run probably 50 to 100 times.
Of course, I don't know the data from our clinical trial yet because we're blinded from it. The core team that got Lundquist to do it, Lundquist has the data, we don't. But at least as far as anecdotally speaking, it's worth making a distinction. FH now covers something like 2,000 SNPs or something along those lines. I think more appropriately, we want to isolate, are we talking monogenetic FH? And monogenetic FH is the one that's typically referred to for like LDL receptor, ApoB, PCSK9, gain of function, and LDL RAP1. Those four do like the heaviest lifting in the FH family. And thus far, I haven't seen them. But to be fair, it's so unlikely they would have ever started a ketogenic diet because they would have gotten their diagnosis really early. They definitely were told by their doctors, avoid any high saturated fat diet, for goodness sakes, you know, try to have as little fat as possible, as little cholesterol consumption as possible. So that could also be self-selection to some degree.
I want to ask Dr. Berry to do Adrian's role. Adrian, our friend, is the best at playing devil's advocate, always thinking about, you know, the challenge that would come forth, the limitations. What pops to mind when you read this paper? What do you think anticipate the limitations and the points will get criticism? And I kind of want to talk about those. I have two in mind myself that I'd like to discuss. But what
I think that probably the two main criticisms you're going to get is, number one, lean mass hyper responder, just like I was talking about my elderly colleagues with Syndrome X. It's just a made up thing. You guys are just trying to get famous and publish this work and act like this is a thing, but this is not really a thing. This is very dangerous to have LDL, regardless of your BMI or your triglycerides or HDL. You guys are trying to normalize a very dangerous metabolic condition. I think you'll hear that a lot. And then the thing that really worries me the most is, I hope that at the end of this paper, I can't remember if you did or not, I hope that you included verbiage like, this seems to be a very important metabolic finding. Much more research is needed in this area. And then what I'm going to say is, you know how many times I've read that at the end of a very compelling paper, the subject of which was not conducive to there being an FDA-approved patent medication. And then not a single other paper ever looking at that again. And some of these papers I've read, they were like, this is compelling. There needs to be more research about this. 20 years ago, and crickets chirping for the next two decades, because there's not an FDA approved pill that you can get, or an injection or an infusion. Therefore, nobody's interested in that. And so that would be that one is my probably the objection you're going to hear. And then the second one is my fear of what's going to happen with this research, because I fear there's not a patented medicine that can come from this.
Well, those weren't the two I was thinking about, but we'll get to those. I think Dave's probably the best equipped to reply to those. Dave, is it made up? And are we going to do future research? Do you think future research is needed?
I'm always surprised by that statement, because of course it's made up. I mean, the whole point of pattern recognition is that you recognize a pattern, you put a name on it, you write it down, and then you actually study and test against it and confirm or disconfirm its value. For sure, they could even say after the paper is published that it's made up. I'm comfortable with that, because it at least gives us further means by which we can research and determine it. And for what it's worth, I'm even going to give them the credit on the second thing you mentioned, Ken, in that it may actually be true that the lean mass hyperresponder phenotype is of concern. You're going to find a lot of doctors like Tro, and Tro, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, who might be more okay with, say, somebody coming in who's on a low carb diet, who has excellent metabolic markers, and they have, say, an LDL of 160 or 170, but is not that okay with seeing it up there at around, like, say, 600 or 700. And it could well be that, in fact, that really is a problematic, that maybe there's a threshold point at which it does become more concerning. It could be more indicative of other issues. And I do want to fit in one more thing, which is, while it's true there are some people who are concerned about being lean mass hyperresponders and taking action, there are some who are unconcerned and feel that, you know, those three cut points in some way, you know, bring them into a club or some kind of tribe or something, for which now they don't have to worry about other things. I do want to emphasize that the cut points, and for that matter, the name, isn't necessarily a source of health in and of itself. It is an observation. So I definitely think people, for example, could be lean mass hyperresponders and have other health issues that may not even have to do with cardiovascular disease. So to whatever degree that we can emphasize, as you did, Ken Berry, that there needs to be further research, absolutely there needs to be further research. And I don't care if there's lowering medication or anything else that's trying to fund the research. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep researching and trying to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, please do. And I promise you, if we need a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe, whatever we need to do, this research needs to be done and it needs to be continued. And so please don't let there be that lone cry in the wilderness at the end of this paper that more research needs to be done about this compelling, hypothesis. And then it just die in the crib and never amount to anything.
I promise you, Ken. I keep on saying to my colleagues here, this is the first domino. This paper is so exciting to me because now you can't ignore this phenomenon. We will keep pushing, but I'm hoping now this interests other people in pursuing the lipid energy model, people with more resources who can do the tracer studies, who can do the biopsy studies. And I'll actually just share this because I think it's really uplifting. I know in social media, we have a lot of really strong opinions. Things get politicized, but you know, I have the benefit of being kind of an unknown at this point, not having any real social media recognition, which means I can go without the political baggage into places like, you know, I'm walking around med school, talking to my peers, talking to professors, you know, well-established cardiologists, and I show them, you know, this profile. I've even shown some of the preprints of the paper that's hopefully going to be coming out on Monday, and I universally get the response of, this is really cool. Because it is really cool. And that's independent from talking about the risk. Just the phenomenon of itself is exciting. And to see the enthusiasm of other young students and even other established, doctors, that's really uplifting for me. So I'm really excited for this paper to come out, not because, and I'm quoting Adrian here, it's ending a conversation, but because it's really going to start one.
Can I add to that one last sentence? I think we also provide an avenue out for doctors who see this phenomenon and are scared, right? And are concerned, and maybe rightly concerned, maybe not rightly concerned, as Dave may show in the future. But there is a it seems to be a very reversible phenomenon. And so that is potentially reassuring. We need more studies, and I think these two are the ones to do them. But I think we kind of built in a potential way to reverse this. And that, I think, should be reassuring for doctors and patients.
Yep, I totally agree with that. And as I said earlier, the average doctor who's not aware of the low-carb, keto, you know, the power metabolically to reverse chronic medical conditions, if they see numbers like this, they are literally going to have to go to the restroom and clean out their undies. If they see a lean mass hyper responder in their clinic and they get the lab back, they're going to be like, they're going to have palpitations, right? But the average doctor who has a cadre of low carb or keto patients, they've seen this once or twice. And so I think now it's going to give them a terminology so that they can actually, you know, when they call the cardiologist, say, hey, I think this guy's a lean mass hyper responder. I know we don't know what that means yet, but at least by just saying that phrase, the cardiologist can say, oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, I just read that paper. And then I think it gives a frame of reference. And it kind of, I think it moves Overton's window a little bit, right? Where now, you know, if the average doctor saw an LDL of 500, they would literally just send you to the undertakers. Like, go ahead and just lay down in a coffin because that's it. Now we've moved the window enough where you can at least have a conversation. Maybe ultimately it'll turn out that this is not a good thing, or maybe not, but at least we can have an intellectual conversation about this without just, you know, calling people names.
I will say something though. It's been surprising to me this year in particular, how many doctors who are not already low carb doctors have sent their patients to our groups or to cholesterolcode.com. It's really been shocking. It's almost been like a major turning point, because while there has been to some degree a little more and a little more interest outside of the low carb sphere, I think it's just because there's been such a repetition. So if you yourself are watching this and you are seeing the triad and you're looking for ways to, you know, not talk to your doctor about it, I say this over and over again. Recognize that you may be the pivotal patient that takes them to the next step, that oftentimes, and you may not even be the first patient, you may be like the fourth or fifth or eighth patient. As you know, Ken, there are so many doctors, and you may be one of them, who were watching their conventional patients going through, and that's how low carb started. Low carb sounds pretty normal to us now, but 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it sounded completely ludicrous. Yep. So low carb is kind of a template for this in many respects, because what it's about is grassroots as it gets. There wasn't like some landmark study for which all of a sudden doctors across the world were like, oh, let's go ahead and put our patients on, you know, high fat, low carb diets. No, it was really from the ground up. There were lots of people who were assessing that data through social media, were sharing it, and was coming to understand it a bit better, to the point where it eventually got more study. And now we have a lot of the great, you know, the same studies that we get from Dr. Ludwig. And it's great, because I think that that's part of what's going to take to get us to the next level.
Totally agree.
Can I just say one thing? The studies were there, they ignored it. I really, you know, the A to Z trial, there were so, even Diet Fits more recently, like the studies were supportive of low carb. Just like this, I think, you know, there are studies that show hints of the lipid energy model that you've coined and really discussed. But nobody's really sat down and put it all together. Some lipidologists know about it. I've talked to lipidologists. They seem to know a little bit. But I think this will be good ammunition for them. Hashtag LMHR study. Is that what it is?
Paper. Oh, which paper. One? This is LMHR paper, and this study is the paper. Study that's
sorry.
The prospective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Hashtag LMHR paper.
Got it. And I'm going to link to the actual paper, which I hope, Nick, is going to be the full text. You guys are not going to support me with just the abstract.
No, and yeah.
Good. I encourage everybody to download that a copy of that paper, print that out. And especially if you fall into this new category, if you're a lean mass hyper responder and your doctor is currently freaked out by you, and wants a witness in the room in case you drop dead while you're there for your doctor's visit, take them a copy of this paper so that they know this is now a named thing. This is not just, oh, you're a dead man walking. This is actually a syndrome or a, you know, I don't know exactly how you guys want to, it's a phenotype. Yeah, right, Dave? And so then there can actually be a conversation. So you actually move the conversational window from, oh, you're dead, to, oh, okay, you're a lean mass hyper responder. So everybody download this paper, print out a copy, take it to your healthcare provider so that we can help spread the message to at least get healthcare providers thinking about this and talking about this. Because when you open a healthcare provider's mind, not only do you make them a better healthcare provider for you, but you make them a better healthcare provider for all their other patients as well. Isn't that right, Troy?
Amen. Amen.
Anything else, guys? Anything else you want to sum up or close out with? Troy, we'll start with you.
No, it's just been a pleasure to work with David Ludwig, Dave, and Nick, and Adrian. These guys are, you know, I'm really excited for what happens next. That's all I can say. What happens next, I'm very excited about. And I'm very excited that I was initially a skeptic of Dave and he converted me. So, you know, I finally
Dave
saw the light.
Dave tends to do that to people. Yeah.
It's a common story. That's for sure.
Dave, anything you want to close up with?
I was going to echo a lot of what Tro said, but even though he's thanked our colleagues, I have to thank Tro. Listen, the fire that started this particular paper started with Tro. It originally started as the case series. We were going to just be focusing on that. And then he had the good sense to get Nick on board. Nick, of course, brought in Adrian. And I mean, we now have such a solid team. And yeah, we can't talk about everything that's in the works, but I can tell you we've got a lot yet to come. And we're pretty excited about what's up ahead. So I'm just so thankful to have connected with so many great people who've been able to make this happen. That it's not just one engineer out in the wild trying to bang a drum and get the lipidologists interested, because that's not been working thus far, but maybe it will soon, given the advancements we've been able to make. So yeah, we'll see.
I love it. Nick, bring it home and give us a closing message and
we'll do. I mean, I'm of mixed emotions. The two that pop to mind, or I guess the three, are gratitude and two types of excitement. The gratitude for Dave, David Ludwig, Adrian, and Tro, all these people that, you know, I'm really standing on the shoulders of giants, it feels like, and it feels, I just feel immensely grateful to be brought in on this and be given the privilege of trying to push this research forward. And then excitement of two types. One you'll sense from me, I'm very nerdy. I just love questions and science. And so this I find fascinating. I've said that like 12 times now. I think this is such an interesting phenotype and it opens up so many questions that I'm excited to pursue. The other aspect of excitement that I want to emphasize is something that Tro said earlier, and Dave has spoken about at length, which is that, and you just mentioned, Dr. Berry, that now we have a name for it. This is a phenotype that scares patients. While there might be a small minority that wear it as, quote, a badge of honor, it's really... it means a lot to a patient, and I can say this with authority as an LMHR patient, to have a label that a lot, like I feel like an orphan disease has just been adopted and somebody's going to be pursuing this research and give me answers. Even if I don't have them right now, I feel like there's hope for the future that I'm going to be studied and I will have answers about what does this high LDL mean for me as a patient so I can make an informed decision. So I'm excited as a scientist, but I'm also excited as a patient who is dealing with, you know, how to deal with balancing being ketogenic diet for other health reasons, whether or not to take medications, and what my high LDL means for me. That's where I'm at right now with this. And yeah, just to bring it home, I think this paper is starting a conversation. This is just shouting to the world, like, LMHR is a thing. They are real. We need to study them. We really need to study them, not just a platitude. And I think, you know, we're not trying to hoard this by any means. I think some groups try to hoard. We're trying to bring everybody in that we possibly can talk to get involved. If you have the resources to do a trial, we will partner with you. We put all the data out for this study very publicly, so you can see how we did our analyses. And if you want to repeat them or try to assess them in different ways, go for it. This is about scientific pursuit for the betterment of scientific knowledge, for the betterment of patients, in as honest and transparent a way as possible. And I hope that we are able to bring people in on this rather than just increasingly polarize the space.
Yeah, yeah, let me just if I could just add to that real quick. So yes, be aware that we even have a Lean Mass Hyperresponder Facebook group. It has, as of my last count, around 7,500 members. So beyond just if you yourself are a Lean Mass Hyperresponder, you can know about the group. Adding on to what Nick is talking about, seriously, if you're a researcher, if you're a clinician, if you are interested in studying this phenotype along with us, please reach out to us. We already have the connections to help, you know, connect these folks. This phenotype is a community in large part, and we're so interested in getting the kinds of things that Nick was talking about, things like tracer studies and biopsy studies and all sorts of things that can help us advance this knowledge. Cannot be emphasized enough. So yes, if you're listening to us right now and you're interested, please reach out.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your work on this this article, and thanks so much for joining me today. You can find all these guys on social media. I know they're all on Twitter with me, and they all have their own social media, and I'm going to link to each of these guys' social media down in the show notes. I'm going to link to a full text link to the paper so you can download this, print it out, have a copy for yourself, send a copy to your healthcare provider.